Kramer, author of H2H Human to Human and host of Leetail TV. Our guest today is Kieran Hannon, Chief Marketing Officer at OpenPath, and with three decades of successfully building best-in-class consumer experiences in mobile, digital, and retail sectors. In his former role as Belkin International's Chief Marketing Officer, he was recognized with the top South by Southwest Valiente CMO Award in 2018. And most recently at OpenPath, he was recognized as one of the world's most influential CMOs of 2020 by Forbes. Please join us. Here is Kieran. Kieran, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here. The last time that I got to interview you was actually in Dublin, Ireland.
That's it. Wow. It's amazing we can remember that, Brian. Good times, right?
It is.
It was such an honor to be able to kind of host you where I grew up in Dublin and go to some of the haunts and enjoy some great crack, which in Ireland we call crack is saying you're having fun. It's spelled C-R-A-I-C. So we had great crack then, and I bet you're going to have great crack today. It's really about the art of conversation. So let's have it.
Absolutely. Well, in doing the prep for this interview, I discovered that you went to a college for civil engineering, which is very interesting given, you are through and through a marketing guy from what I know. How does an engineering student become a marketing person?
Well, growing up in Ireland, Irish parents and so forth, manners was so important. So they insisted I did something with civil in it. So that's where that came about. No, it's a great question. So, the story is, I was a swimmer. I swam internationally for Ireland and in that process, obviously being a team sport as well, with my club team and then my international group, swimming was a great sport to bring people together. And as part of that process, I helped kind of organize swim meets and so forth. So when I was ready to go to college, my father and his brothers were quite pioneering. They're quite advanced for that time, where they kind of a vertically integrated development company where they designed, developed, and built commercial buildings, residential buildings, and so forth. And as part of that, my dad really wanted me to help take over the family business. I'm the eldest of four boys and a girl. So very much focused on kind of, okay, Kieran, you're gonna do civil engineering. So when I actually, started in college, I became the college sports officer as well, which is a student union title. You get voted in by the students and organizing a lot of college events, all the intervarsity events. I was also president of the Irish University Swimming Association. And in that guise, I came to attention of the brand manager of Rothmans Ireland. Rothmans is a well-known, it was like the Philip Morris of Europe, cigarette company. Which is interesting because I didn't smoke, swimmer, but they were very big into motorsports, the Rothmans Racing Rally Team, the Dunhill Golf, Dunhill Sailing, that was one of their brands. And he had a need for a promotions person to work on weekends, which worked very nicely because I was in college. It was actually in that guise I got the marketing bug. I actually basically got to experience marketing under one of the great marketers, William Morrison, who went on to run Rothmans International and so forth. So that's where I got the bug for marketing. And we worked with an agency in London. I really enjoyed the advertising side. And so when I finished college after 4 years, I had an opportunity to come to the United States on a J-1 work visa. And I took that as an opportunity to actually get into marketing. Now, I did have to spend a little time while I was waiting to get into advertising work. And you'll know this from the Bay Area. I actually worked as a site engineer at Ames, the NASA base, Ames Air Force Building, on the Space Shuttle Simulator building that they're building right there. And so I did that for a few months just to have money. But at the same time, I tried to get into advertising. And I thought that was the bee knees. You know, I worked for the Philip Morris Europe, and no one gave a shit here in the United States. You went to the bottom of the pile. So lo and behold, while I was still doing that with the San Francisco Ad Club, they had this great master series where for people wanting to get into advertising or your entry level, you could go and learn from the practitioners of advertising what advertising is about. And I got to learn from some of the really, really good ones. And that got my foot in the door in advertising. And that was the first part of my career in advertising in the US. And I actually never went back to Ireland. And fast forward, and number of years later, my father's deathbed, you know, we were talking about it. He says, the best decision you ever made, you've made the right decision. So he confirmed it.
Oh,
yeah.
What a great.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was happy for me. He knew this is really what I was about. So or else I could have gone down the path of civil engineering, which is great. It was a great education, great background. I really enjoyed it. But marketing, I think, was always in my DNA, and I kind of found it by coming to the United States and studying advertising.
Oh, that's awesome. It's fascinating to see how a lot of, you know, people start out thinking that they're going to be one thing, and then they end up doing another. And, you know, I've got a child in college right now, and she's switched her mind maybe three times in the last 2 weeks. And so I'm always curious, you know, where we're all going to end up, because, you know, she's that's normal. Yeah. And I was telling her that the other day, and it's, you know, it's right up there with, you know, just because you study something doesn't mean that that's what you're actually going to do.
True. Very true. And you just don't know. It's part of growing and experiences, and they all build upon one another, right? They don't detract. So I just tell folks, don't sweat it. In the moment, do the best of what you're doing, and it will just continue to build and grow. And the other thing is, you know, opportunities present themselves, but you've got to be prepared to jump in and take advantage of it. So that's the other thing that you got to be ready to do. Just don't kind of sit back and kind of let things slide by. Think about how you can best, like, for instance, I tried so hard to get into the ad world in San Francisco. And, you know, I was, you know, fresh off the plane, fresh off the boat. No way. You didn't know anyone. You didn't go to college here in the United States. Didn't make it. They didn't really care. So, you know, some people may have gone, okay, I'll give up and I'll do something else. I figured out a way to get in the door by doing the San Francisco Ad Club Master Series. And that then introduced me to folks, and things built from there.
That's awesome. What is maybe one way that you've used that engineering degree, the civil engineering degree, that surprised you in how you're seeing that show up in even what you do now or what you've done in your career?
Well, definitely attention to detail, right? That's a really important part. Being able to think about things in different ways, a logical approach, which I think is really good. The other part about engineering is there's many multiple ways to think about and approach problems, and it gives you that ability to use that discipline in problem solving, right? So I think that's what's really helped me and my guys. I remember one time I was at Young & Rubicam, and it was in the early 90s, and Y&R, Chevron was a client. And it was the time when oil prices were really, really low. And so they had Chevron, about 7,500 at the time, gas stations around the United States, of which about 4,500 were company owned. The rest were franchise owned. I think that was about the right balance, if I remember correctly. But what they were doing is they had all of this real estate. Gas prices were like really, really low. So they weren't getting the ROI on that real estate. But they had all these C stores, convenience stores, that they weren't necessarily kind of promoting or utilizing to increase the ticket, right? And so I took an opportunity to pitch to Y&R management and said, hey, I think we could go to Chevron and present a food marketing program that will help increase, you know, per ticket, the dollar value per ticket for each customer, and ergo the ROI will go up. And no one had ever done that. And Y&R gave me carte blanche to go and do it. I worked with Chevron. lo and behold, the management of Chevron loved it, but said, we've no budget for this. So we then went and pitched all the vendors, the Philip Morris's of this world, the Anheuser-Busch's of this world, you name it, the Cokes of this world, to pitch in and fund the program. And next minute, Chevron had a $5 million food marketing program that returned a multiple 3 to 4x of that that they'd never seen before. So I think that just like you approach it logically, methodically, and you'll get there.
Wow. That's, you know, there's so much to unpack in that. And I would love to go down that road, but I've got a whole bunch of other things that I also want to do, especially what I was hearing from you. And in one of those things was, you know, that you had worked for, you know, and led in agencies. You've been, so obviously you've been agency side, you've been client side, you've been big companies, you've been at small companies, you've been at startups.
Everything from 11 people to 65,000 people. I've worked the gamut in between 11 to 65,000.
Wow. It's too bad you didn't work for a 66,000. That would have been cool. That's kind of where
actually I've worked for a company that actually had 2 million. Yeah. Million and 2 million Foxconn, because Foxconn bought Belkin. So we can get to that at the end. Yeah. So I'm nearly sure it's 2 million employees, Foxconn. So everything from 11 to 2 million. There we go. We just figured it out.
Now we can check the 66,000 off your list.
Exactly.
That's good. So, with all of that, the different size companies that you've worked at in marketing roles, you know, CMO to head of marketing to every kind of working your way up the ladder. Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are any keys to success that span across all those roles?
I think there's a mindset is so important, the aptitude and attitude and the flexibility and agility, right? I think some people get very caught up on a career path that is very linear, like going up a tree trunk, right? And they're going up each step, they're checking it off, you know, 2 years I got to go to this and that. And that can give them a certain skill set that can work for some people. I'm also a big believer in branching out on each kind of part of the trunk and into the leaves and trying certain things and expanding my perspective, right? So you don't necessarily always, like for instance, the food marketing program I just talked about, Y&R, within the account team and the company, the food market part of the business was not looked upon whatsoever, might have been looked down upon because it wasn't the core business. I went somewhere that people weren't paying attention and made an important part of the business, right? So those are things, you know, I always say in marketing, either you're solving a problem that someone has as a marketer, i.e. an itch that needs to be scratched, or alternatively, you are capitalizing an opportunity that you're creating. And both could be one of the same, or it could be different, but that's kind of what you need to be kind of focused on. So again, going out in the branches of a tree, learning slightly different things, and then coming back in and going up the trunk to the next level, it gives you a much stronger platform for success, in my opinion.
Mm. You know, there's so many changes that have happened across the years that we could spend a whole nother interview on everything that has happened to marketing. It's become psychological and almost, you know, at one point it was a marketing agency, and now people are pulling marketing internally, and you know, some don't, and marketing has all these different channels, and now we're omnipresent, and we could go on and on about all the stuff that's happened to marketing.
The pendulum isn't just swinging from left to right, it's also swinging forward and back at the same time. So you've this kind of three-dimensional pendulum in the marketing world for sure.
Yeah. Well, so amongst all of that, how do you design for that, where there's unique requirements for success in all of these specific environments? And there's so many, I mean, especially at a large company where you've got so many so many, you're spinning so many plates.
Right.
What is the measurement for success? How do you relate to that?
It can vary, right? Depends on the objective, right? Depends on the business objective, which the marketing objectives should feed into in the strategy. So it really depends. At Belkin, we used one metric. And again, Belkin, when I joined, was like a 30 plus year startup, right? It did start in Chet Pipkin's garage. Chet is the founder of Belkin, the Kenan Belkin. And he found it in his parents' kitchen table. He was soldering cables together. And then they kicked him out to the garage because he expanded, and then he went from the garage and so forth. So Belkin was a 30-year startup when I joined. But they were always focused on kind of creating compelling user experiences, addressing the customer user issue, right? People inspired products. And so how people use the products and connecting the device to the end user's desired interest, how you make that come together. But as a company, we actually, while you have financial metrics and you have other metrics that are important, you know, SKU profitability and so forth, regional profitability, channel profitability, we all used one metric, which was the Net Promoter Score. And that's what we followed religiously, right? You know, depending on the product and the category, you know, for Wemo, which is a smart home brand, you know, we do a 3-day, a 3-week, a 3-month, and then yearly NPS study of a user experience to really understand how that experience with that product grew over time. And that was really important. And the other thing that we pay a lot of attention on because of customer reviews in the consumer electronics space, Amazon very, very quickly overtook Google as a number one source for where people initially went to look for consumer electronics products. They searched. 70% of all searches started on Amazon, not Google. And so what was the currency for that? The star rating and the reviews. So we very much focused on what those reviews look like. And if anything got to like a 3.5, red alerts would go, what's wrong with that product? Why is it at that? So those are things we would look at, and those were important. But at Belkin, I mean, when I joined, it was a very regionalized marketing machine. As an example, we had designers, graphic designers, not product designers, graphic designers sitting in 11 different groups around the world, right? So we had different experiences around packaging, around messaging, around the role of that accessory in people's lives. So those are just things that, you know, over a period of time that you brought together. And so we unified, went from a very regionalized to very globalized structure with platforms in place to enable that. And then we had a machine that we were doing work 24 hours around the world. It would start one place and continue, but you had the consistency of that around the world, which is really important.
You know, it feels to me like, and this happens in just about every company, but when you look at all the complexities of what you just said, that there would be a lot of, I guess the best word I can say is politics involved in doing something like that. And in, I mean, you're shifting the way that a business operates, and you're moving people into places where it makes sense for the company, but they may not see the vision until they're in it. And how do you approach that? I mean, at any job you walk into, it's going to be that kind of a challenge, I would imagine. Yeah.
It's a bit of a long game, but it can't be too long, right? Because you want to get results. So it's setting up kind of the insights and setting up kind of the structure so you can point to areas where there's opportunity for improvement. But along the way, you're having these little wins, right? It could be very small wins or it could be large wins. But figure out those wins that you can get that lends credibility to the team that's doing it. And those wins are the stepping stones to bigger wins over time, right? But it's pretty logical. How could someone not argue with that there's designers, graphic designers, sitting in 11 different groups in addition to marketing? That doesn't make any sense, right? And so, again, the management team, we're a very small C-suite, and so we're very unified. And so I had complete kind of support from the management team and the CEO. And so people knew, but again, I didn't go out the next day and say, hey, we're changing that. It was a process. It was about a year, a little over a year, I think, before we kind of started to, and I did it in stages. I brought in like the design function, some of the channel marketing function, and over time, the next year was e-commerce and so forth. So you don't do it all at once because you can break the system. You do it in stages and it builds from there. PR was another example where PR was very regionalized. Then we brought in a great PR structure globally that really fueled both the global part and the regional part. So again, stages.
What an experience of a lifetime to be able to do something like that. I'm drooling a little bit on what it was. And yet at the same time, I know there was a lot more effort put into that on an everyday and every night basis in some cases to just do something like that.
It was long days, like the start morning with Europe and US during the day, then a lot of Asia calls into the evening. But you know, it's what you do. It didn't feel like work. It felt like it was a great journey. And when I joined, you know, as I was joining, it was one brand. And then the company acquired Linksys. So on my first day in the job, I had two brands to manage. And by the way, Chet said to me, Kieran, I also want you to run our customer care team. And I'm going, oh, shit. and to his credit, I kind of, you know, pushed back and said, Chet, I've got a lot of things. Not only do I have to get the Belkin brand going, but also we just acquired Linksys and that needs to be rebranded and all that stuff. Not renamed, but you know, Cisco had it for quite a while and it, you know, so I said, there's a lot to do. And he said, to his credit, he said, Kieran, there's nothing better than customer care helping you understand the voice of the customer. And I didn't think of it like that. Wow. And I go, yeah, you're right. And so I was with Belkin a little over 6 years, and within a 3-year span, I was able to kind of build out the customer care team. We streamlined it. We optimized it. We moved a lot to social, where we're doing about 10,000 successful engagements on social media. And what I was able to do is understand the important parts of customer care organization. And at that time, we had about 300 FTEs around the world doing customer care for the company with Concentrix, an outsourced call center organization. And we had the size of about 25 people internally managing that. And I was able to work with our CIO at the time and move kind of the pure technical operational stuff out and move it over to CIO. And I retained all the voice of customer stuff. And then that then allowed me focus then on other things that we were doing, like building out Wemo as a standalone brand and then launching Finn as its own standalone brand. So you do things in stages and evolve from there.
You know, it's funny. You sent me a wonderful package one time and I set Wemo up and I set it up so that when I left the home, my house, then the lights would turn off because of geofencing. But I forgot that when I left the house, my family was still at home. So that was more of a human error that had nothing to do with that. But
cool.
You know, you also received, you've received a lot of awards, but you received one award at South by Southwest for bold and courageous marketing in 2018. First of all, congrats on that. And tell us more about why you were chosen for that award.
It was for a body of work, a number of things. The Belkin brand, it was known and loved. You know, 95% of the US population at one point has had a Belkin product, right? So it had a very much a product relationship, but it didn't have necessarily a tangible, aspirational position in people's mindset. And so over a period of time, you know, help position, elevate the Belkin brand. So actually at a point, it was at the Apple store outside the Apple brand and Beats, which Apple owns, the largest third-party brand at Apple. And then our NPS scores went significantly higher over that period of time as well. So the Belkin brand, rebranding Linksys and integrating Linksys into the organization, building out that brand portfolio, and launching the Linksys Velop Mesh platform, which for the marketplace was highly innovative. Our approach, even on packaging, it was very simplistic. It was non-tech, no speeds and feeds. And again, that won a ton of awards, including JD Power. Mm-hmm. And so for Linksys, Wemo, building out the Wemo brand and launching Finn, and then also helping sell Belkin as a company to Foxconn. Mm. So it was really for a body of work that I did over a period of time.
And I got to be there at CES, I believe, when the Mesh system came out and you got that JD Power Award. And man, were you beaming. It was such a cool thing to be able to celebrate with you.
Yeah, we said we are going to disrupt the networking space. Wi-Fi, consumers deserve better. And we said, we're going to launch a product that they deserve. And that's what we did. We got a lot of pushback from retailers on the packaging. You know, they said, this is never going to sell. We don't like the packaging. It doesn't look like a tech product and so forth. And lo and behold, those retailers that said that to us came back and said, we made a mistake. This is selling like hotcakes. You guys nailed it. Now, little did he know, we did all of our homework. We would never do anything without doing your homework. It was a year and a half of research, understanding the user needs, the setup needs, the presentation needs, the out-of-box experience, the customer care needs if it was required, you name it. We looked at every touch point. So we reimagined what Wi-Fi should be.
Man, it's no small undertaking. What do you think somebody today needs to do to win that kind of an award? Have things changed in enough time since that time ago that you think they're looking for that kind of same level of impact, or you think it's different?
I think absolutely there's always. I mean, impact is kind of like in the eye of the beholder, right? So I think it's what you do and how you make something happen, understanding kind of the objective that you're trying to achieve and how you execute against that objective and the results. So absolutely, I mean, there's many examples of companies, you know, during this pandemic, we're talking now during the pandemic and it's gone through different phases of lockdown and so forth. But there's companies that are doing a good job in pivoting and reacting accordingly. Even here at OpenPath, for example, right? OpenPath is in the access control space, which to some folks may sound mundane, right? That was your card that you used to get in the building, your classic card.
And OpenPath is where you're currently the CMO, is that correct?
Correct, where I'm currently CMO, yes. And we have this great solution where you could just roll up, there's a device on the wall, it's called a reader, which is what you use to wave the card in front of, right? And so the OpenPath solution is using your mobile device, right? Everyone's got this supercomputer in their pocket. And those cards that people use, they're firstly unsecure because someone can steal it and clone it, or you could give it to a friend, they can go into a building. Secondly, the hassle. How often have you lost your card, misplaced it? You've heard that many, many times. How many times you misplaced or lost this? There you go. So you always have this in your pocket. And so the founders of OpenPath, when they were at their last company, this is their fourth company, the previous company, Edgecast, a content delivery network, was acquired by Verizon. And during that experience, they got a card for the Verizon office door here in LA. And because they're in the data side of the Verizon Media Group, they got a card for the data center. And over time, this expanded as they went to different Verizon offices. And after a quarter, they had like a little mini backpack full of key cards and they didn't know what worked where, right? And they go, this doesn't make any sense. They waved a bag in front of a reader hoping it'd work. They go, we got to solve it for this. That's the genesis for OpenPath. They went and solved the user issue, not the customer issue who buys the access control, the end user issue. And lo and behold, what they did is created a, you can have the app on your phone, your phone doesn't need to be open. You roll up the door and you would just touch the rear with your hand and you're already authorized and in you go. So that was our main differentiation in the marketplace. You didn't need a card. You can have one if you want. We've got our cards and they're encrypted, but you roll up, touch your hand, the reader, in you go. All of our communications, all of our messaging, all of our visual assets all depicted that. Mm. Pandemic hit. Touch is not a good thing. And we're going, oh gosh, what do we do? So the engineering team huddled, and because we make all of our own hardware and software, and that includes our firmware for the readers, nothing's off the shelf, the engineering team figured out how over weekend in early March, right? Late March, figured out how to push out a software update that then for a user to come up, didn't have to physically touch the reader. They could wave their hand in front of it and the door would unlock, because we've got capacitive sensors in the readers. And so we detect that motion in front of the reader. So we went from touch to touchless to hands-free. That's an example of a quick evolution because of a market situation that we didn't anticipate.
Wow, that sounds like a happy outcome, and a lot like what an agile company needs to do.
Yeah, very agile. To make very agile. Yeah,
make a decision like that and implement on it.
You know. So again, we quickly updated all of our collateral to show a touchless experience. Over a month, 35 days, we added about 60 pages of new content about helping companies understand how to safeguard the workplace. And we've gone from like a physical security access control company that's highly disruptive to a company that's a safety platform for the built world, right? We're both security and peace of mind. And it's about your world, your way, how you want to enter the office, how you want to use OpenPath, whether you're an end user, a system administrator, or a system integrator, it's your way.
Mm, fascinating stuff. I know that there's also a piece that I wanted to ask you about when it comes to just on the marketing side. You know, some of the essence of marketing is best practices, mm-hmm. and just the foundational stuff of the things that you see folks doing. You're like, why is that even a best practice? That it doesn't work. It used to work maybe, or it never worked. What are some of those that you think are best practices, but they really aren't that great? And then on the flip side, what are great ones?
Let me start with the latter first, because I think it might highlight the former. One great example is subjective opinions. That is appalling, right? If you're not doing research, if you're not constantly talking to the end user, to the customer, and whether it is in a deliberate manner, i.e. where it's structured, where you're doing focus groups or surveys, or whether it's more ad hoc, where you're listening on social media and comments, watching what they post about products on various online forums. If you're not doing that, then you have no right to be a marketer. The voice of the customer is paramount. And a key trait, I believe, of a strong marketer is having an innate curiosity that never stops. Always keep asking, why are we doing it this way? Why are we doing it that way? Always keep pushing through, working through the complexity to get to the simplicity, right? So, constantly, like at Belkin, for example, I ran research. We still have a qualitative facility on site. We were constantly doing research. So we would have people in just on, different groups, different demographics for different brands. We know when they're scheduled, so we know that the pressing questions we would need answered, whether it's about an existing product that we want to improve, about a new product idea that we have that we wanted to get reactions to. We could even mock it up overnight. And we had a prototyping lab, a classic clay model shop, our 3D printing. And we'd get feedback the next day. They would tweak it overnight again, and then we would test it again the next day. It was all about the end-to-end experience, not just the product, the delivery of the product, the out-of-box experience, what the packaging looked like, the messaging on the packaging, all that stuff we were constantly testing, right? So that's what you need to be doing. You need to be like, every day I'm spending time talking to, you know, customers, understanding kind of how we're addressing their needs, where there's opportunities to help them better, where we're missing in our lack of communication. That's kind of all the stuff that you need to be doing.
Did you ever walk into like a Best Buy and see your products and just start watching how people were interacting with your stuff? That as a CMO, I would imagine, man, this is like a toy, a treasure chest of information right here.
All the time we would just sit there, watch, observe, sometimes get kicked out because what are you doing here? Are you stalking or a little, but no. And the Best Buy stores would know who we are because we'd be in there. Yeah, stores, mystery shopping we would do all the time. We actually had Belkin, we have brand ambassadors who would go out and work with the channel and do a lot of that as well, right? They would do demos for the blue shirts and so forth, which is, as you know, is the Best Buy term. So again, but there's nothing better than being in the moment, watching people going through the 6 feet, 3 feet, 10 feet kind of evolution coming up to a display, the end cap impact and what shelf you're on and what's resonating. And then the package story, what should be on front versus the back versus the side. How do you tell the story, but you don't put 10 pounds of shit in a 5 pound bag right in the front, right? Some people want to put everything in the front, nothing sticks. So yeah, it's great.
Wonderful, wonderful, yeah. And I always felt like somebody was watching me, and thank you for confirming it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to leave off on is really just more of a fresh piece of news alongside a huge congratulations, because you were recently received an award from Forbes for being in the top 50 most influential CMOs. So tell us more about what you think got you on that list.
Oh, well, it's indeed a great honor. Thank you, Brian. I really very kind of you to say so. I would say it's a bunch of things. Obviously, for to be on that list is not just a moment in time. I think it's how they've watched you over the years have the impact that you have, which I think is a big part of it. But I'm very proud, as you probably see that list, it's a global list. And it's 50 of the top CMOs globally. I'm at number 31. All other 49 brands, I'm nearly sure you've heard, right? They're global powerhouses in their own right, leaders, each of them. And now you've got OpenPath, a company that's a four-year-old company. It was 2 years in stealth, so we're only 2 years live. We're a two-year-old brand and we're on this list. So it's truly an honor for me for the company to be recognized like this, because it's the company's doing the brand that they created. We've done a couple of things since the pandemic started. One thing that our competitors have since mimicked, some of them have, is we understand activity at the commercial real estate level for buildings in the built world, not residential, we're in commercial, right? So you think businesses. We understand the activity in those buildings, people coming and going, right? And so as the stay-at-home directives came out on a state-by-state basis, we could see in an anonymized basis the decline in entries to offices. And so we thought this type of data is very interesting to see how quickly that rate of change was happening as a different state. So we captured on a state-by-state basis. We also captured on a vertical basis, and we called it our social distancing index, SDI. And what it showed is, as you saw, we looked at February 24th, I think was the date when the first major announcement by the administration and the first kind of the official kickoff, the pandemic stay-at-home directive started. We tracked it from that state by state as they kind of, and people stayed at home and they complied with it and they went, you saw that decreasing. And then as states started reopening, you could see it start to increase. And some states didn't change that much. Actually, one state, Nebraska, went above 100% because they brought on more temporary help to help with manufacturing, which is very interesting, right? Another kind of neat insight that we saw within the first month, one of our key verticals are places of worship. We have a very, very robust lockdown solution, which unfortunately is required in this day and age, which places of worship, education, higher education, really appreciate and use. We actually saw increases at churches. More people were going to church because they're looking for solace, right? And so those are interesting things. But anyway, that social distancing index is something that's been written up and referred to in a lot of media. And I think that's one that the company is recognized for. And I'm just kind of, I'm like the vessel for that. And the other thing is how quickly we reacted and changed and upgraded, not just our product story, but our brand evolution from being a touch brand to being a touchless brand and a safety platform for the built world.
Wow, you know, my friend, I could sit and talk to you all day. This is, and time also flew by. Thank you so much for sharing all the intricacies and history and just your own story along the way. And congratulations on everything you've accomplished and so much more to come.
Thank you. You're so kind, Brian. And I always refer to your insights around, you know, it's not B2B, it's not B2C, it's always H2H, human to human. I use that all the time.
Oh, well, thank you. And that's exactly why I partnered with Leadtail to work with them on the series, because they run their business the same way. So thank you once again.
Thank you. Really, and hopefully soon we will enjoy one another's company in person over some of the great Irish libations.
It's going to happen. It will happen.
You bet. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hi, everybody. Spencer here on the Leadtail team. We want to thank Kieran Hammond for being our guest on the show today. If you'd like to continue the conversation, tweet us on Twitter at Leadtail or our guest at Kieran Hammond.
If you want to see the full video interview series, you can find this episode and more at leadtailtv.com. Please make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have ideas for the show? Do you know someone who would be great to be a guest? Drop us a line at studios@leadtail.com. Thanks.